Matthew 27, I want to look back at the book of Matthew. Well, I figure about 15 more years I'll probably be done, as long as things go well and I don't get bogged down anywhere. But I'm trying to make some headway, but I want to tell you it's not time to hurry through. I was talking to somebody today and I was telling through the verses ahead, my burden will be, my concern will be being mechanical. How in the world do you explain the crucifixion and the resurrection? How in the world can you express, just like it's been said already tonight, they're just words, just don't seem adequate. You can say the words, but it just doesn't seem like it's enough. But anyway, we'll take a stab at it. We're looking at where Jesus is being interrogated by Pilate, and we left last time with Pilate's wife sending a message to Pilate. In verse 19 says, when he had sat down in the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, have thou nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. Pilate, no doubt, is under a lot of pressure. He's under the pressure of Rome because Caesar is already, to be honest, kind of mad at him. Pilate's made some mistakes, and Caesar's already kind of watching him, making sure that he doesn't do anything else dumb. And then the Jews, they, of course, Pilate's job is try to keep them under control. And if they get mad, they're liable to riot and then set up evil. But then, of course, that's going to make Caesar, the Roman king, he's going to get mad about that. And Pilate probably really did want to try and do the right thing. That pressure was there. And now his wife comes and says, don't do anything bad to this just man. I said before, it's really a shame that an ungodly woman comes and tells the truth about Jesus. She said he's a just man. He's an innocent man. He's a right man. He's a good man. All the Jews, those who should have accepted him, at least for the most part, not all of them, but many of them, most of them, they've turned against Jesus and despised him. And here's this ungodly lady who doesn't even know God speaking up for him. But then in verse 20, but the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. And remember, Pilate has asked the Jews, well, who do you want me to release to you? It was a custom that they would release one prisoner every year at the time of Passover. And Pilate, no doubt, he thought, well, surely they would rather have Jesus. I mean, after all, he is a good man. He's going around doing good. He really hasn't hurt anybody. And surely they'll choose him over a murderer, over an insurrectionist, over this sorry scum of a man named Barabbas. But he's about to find out that he was wrong. See, when Pilate's wife sends the message to him, he's sort of distracted from questioning Jesus. And while he's dealing with his wife and the message, here's the Jews out here in the courtyard, if you remember, outside the judgment hall, and they're stirring up the crowd. They're spreading the word, and they have already got them up to a fever pitch. Or when Pilate comes out and asks, who will you want me to release unto you? Notice verse 22. Pilate said unto them, what shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say unto him, let him be crucified. In verse 21, it says, and the governor answered and said unto them, whether of the twain will ye that I release unto you? And they said, Barabbas. They've already got the crowd ready. Instantly they cry, Barabbas, Barabbas, give us Barabbas. And I'm convinced Pilate was probably shocked about that. And he asked, well, what do you want me to do with Jesus? What do you want me to do with the one that's called Christ? And verse 22, and they said, let him be crucified. It's amazing how quickly people turn. This is the same crowd. Many of them were the ones just days earlier that had been crying, Hosanna, deliver us, and had been accepting on the surface level Jesus. They were wanting all he could do for them, but now he hadn't done what they expected, and boy, they don't want anything to do with him, so they turn him over to Pilate. It's amazing. Listen, they'd rather have an ungodly prisoner that has murdered people released instead of the spotless Son of God. But that's not unusual. The world nowadays wants nothing to do with Christ. They'd a lot rather have a sinful party or have fun doing something that's wrong instead of the Son of God. So it's things haven't changed. And they cry as one, let him be crucified. So we find this thing of crucifixion. Now, crucifixion was established by the Persians, but the Romans perfected it. Crucifixion was such a dire way of execution that it was literally against the law for a Roman citizen to be crucified. And they saved crucifixion for the worst of criminals. And they decided that Jesus deserved that crucifixion. That was the way he would be executed. It's amazing to me how ungodly they were. It was one of the slowest and most painful ways to put someone to death. Sometimes they lasted for days on the cross. Can you imagine hanging on a cross by nails for days? The stress usually was what they either died of suffocation or blood loss or of a heart attack. It was not a quick death, my point, verse 23. And the governor said, why? What evil hath he done? Pilate said, why do you want me to hand over Barabbas and crucify Jesus? What has he done? And they cried out the more, saying, let him be crucified. They didn't really care what he had done. He asked, what has he done to deserve crucifixion? And they didn't answer. They said, let him be crucified. It doesn't matter what he's done. We know he deserves. We just want to get rid of him. And that's the cry of the world today. They want to get rid of him. They said, let him be crucified. They refused to accept the Lord. It's common today. Now, Pilate has already said on three different occasions, he is not guilty. He is innocent. I find no fault in him. To be honest, Pilate's doing a good bit. I cannot say he's doing the best he can. I cannot say he's doing all that he can for Jesus, but he is trying. He is making an effort. He could have, by the way, said, I don't care what you want. I am not releasing Jesus. He could have taken a stand, but he didn't, out of fear. So he says, what should I do to him? And they say, crucify him. So there's no way he can be excused. There's no way what he did can be explained away. Look at verse 24. When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but rather that a turmoil was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. He did a common custom of that day. It was used of the Hebrews and the Greeks and the Latins that they would go through a ritual of washing the hands. And in essence, he was saying, what's going on is not my fault. If there's any guilt about this Jesus man and what's going to happen to him, it is not on my hands. I cleanse my hands of all the guilt. Only problem is that didn't do a bit of good. That water didn't wash away his guilt. He was publicly saying, what happens to Jesus is not my fault, but it was his fault. And the cleansing of hands did nothing. Did you notice what he said? I am innocent of the blood of this just person. Time after time after time, they call him the just person. They are saying he's innocent, but he's going to die anyway. But after all, isn't that what he came to do? The innocent dying for the guilty. We know he was innocent, but we weren't. He died for us. And notice in verse 25, then answered all the people and said, his blood be on us and on our children. Yeah, that just reading that verse strikes fear into my heart. I'm talking about here's a man that is innocent and Pilate knows it. And to be honest, the Jews know it. And the Romans know it. To be honest, everybody knew it. But that doesn't matter. They want him gone. They want to get rid of him. So they do whatever it takes, whatever means they can find to get rid of him. And Pilate said, "It's not my fault." So they said, "Let his blood be on us and our children." They are saying whatever guilt there is that comes from the dealing of this man, let that guilt be on us and on our children. You know what? God took them to their word. He took them up on that comment. Because, listen, they suffered tremendously. Within about 40 years, Titus came through Jerusalem and destroyed the temple and much of Jerusalem. And listen, 1 million Jews were killed and thousands were killed by crucifixion. They said, "Let his blood be on us and our children." And God said, "Okay, we'll see to that. We'll make sure that happens." And even today, the children of these people, the Jews, are blinded. God has literally set them aside in their blindness, in their hard-heartedness. He has for a while temporarily set Israel aside. They are getting what they deserve. They are. The blood is being held accountable to them and their children. I'll tell you what, there's a lot more involved with this than what they realize. They are still paying even today. Verse 26, "Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified." He released Barabbas, the man who was guilty got to go free, and the man that was innocent paid the price of dying. Sounds kind of familiar. Sounds like Rick. Sounds like you. Jesus, hey, Barabbas was able to go free because Jesus took his place. Barabbas should have died. He was guilty. He deserved to die, but Jesus didn't. I deserve to go to hell, but I ain't going because Jesus took my place. I am like Barabbas, and so are you. I got to go free, and Jesus didn't. By the way, that was predicted in Matthew 20, verse 19. Jesus said that that's going to happen. Pilate delivered Barabbas to the people and sent Jesus to be scourged. The scourging was not just a regular whipping. The Jews had their whipping for punishment. They would take a regular whip, and the Bible says that we're not to give more than 40 lashes, so they just to make sure, in case the one delivering the blows miscounted, they would only give 39 lashes. Remember, Paul talked about receiving 39 or 40 stripes and save one. So the Jews had their whipping. They used whipping for punishment. That was nothing like the Romans' whipping. The Romans used a cat of nine tails. A whip with nine lashes with some say lead, some say bone, some say wood, some say stones. But these articles, these items were tied into the lashes. And when the whip came down on the back of the victim, they tied the victim up on a pole with his hands up above his head, stretching all the back muscles tight. And that whip, when it came violently. Those Roman soldiers were trained in this. They knew what they were doing, and they were angry, mad, and sinful. They were not gentle. I've heard so many people say that Jesus received 40 stripes, but we don't have any idea. This was not a Jewish whipping. This was a Roman whipping. There is no telling how many times he got hit with that cat of nine tails. At first, the lashes would cause bruising and swelling. But as they continued to whip, they continued to lash, those welts, those bruises opened up into bleeding mass, and they literally, the back and their backside and the legs would be nothing but ribbon flesh. Many times the internal organs would be visible and sometimes even fall out just from the scourging. A lot of people died just from the scourging, never made it to the cross. And that's what Pilate did to Jesus. And he didn't deserve it. He didn't do anything to deserve it. They were beaten without mercy. And that's the way it was with Jesus. I ask you a question. If Pilate knew Jesus was innocent, why did he have him scourged? Now, Roman law, and it's very teachy tonight, so just hang on. Roman law dictated that if it was going to be a death by crucifixion, scourging was to precede that. So scourging was a part of the crucifixion. But why did Pilate have Jesus scourged? Because, listen to me, after he was scourged, he brought Jesus before the people and tried to get them to release him anyway. I believe that Pilate thought, if I can have him whipped, and they can see him in that agony, and they can see the results of that lashing, the results of that scourging, maybe that will be enough. That will satisfy their taste for blood. And they will say, Pilate, let him go. I believe that's one of the reasons why he had him scourged. Because Pilate really did want to find a way out. But it didn't work. Verse 27. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus in the common hall and gathered unto him the whole band of soldiers. Now, Pilate is still speaking with Jesus. Remember, he's in the judgment hall. He's inside, and it's a Gentile dwelling, if you remember. So the Jews ain't about to go into that Gentile dwelling because it would defile them, and they won't be able to partake of Passover. So they're outside, and Pilate's going inside and talking with Jesus, coming outside and talking with the Jews, going back in and talking with Jesus, and coming back out and talking with the Jews. Now, he's just talked to Jesus, to the people, and they said, who should I release, Barabbas or Jesus? They say Barabbas. He releases Barabbas, and he goes back in and he talks to Jesus again. That's what we're finding here. Look in verse 27, read it again. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus in the common hall and gathered unto him the whole band of soldiers. Pilate goes in and talks with Jesus for the last time and releases him to the soldiers. A band of soldiers was 600 soldiers. Listen to me, for one man, 600 soldiers were assigned to Jesus. These were the soldiers that were assigned to help Pilate while he was in Jerusalem. Brawny men, tough men, rough men, most of them sinful men. Look in verse 28. And they, the soldiers, stripped him and put on him a scarlet robe. They're about to scourge him. Pilate says, okay, if you want Barabbas, you can have him. I'm going to have Jesus scourged, and that's what we're finding here. And these soldiers go and get Jesus, and they stripped him, and that's exactly what it means. He was stripped naked, I'm convinced with all my heart, and put on him a scarlet robe. Well, if he's a king needs a robe. So they're going to be mocking him. Look in verse 29. And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, every king's got to have a crown. They put it upon his head and a reed. Every king's got to have a scepter and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him. Every king gets bowed before and is honored. So they're mocking him. That's exactly what it says. They bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. These Roman soldiers are mocking Jesus, making fun of him. They get that crown of thorns that you've seen so many times. I'm sure the pictures of, they plaid that crown of thorns, and cram it on his head. The Bible also says they take that reed and strike him on the head. That drives those thorns deeper into his head. They make a crown. He's a king. They give him a reed. He's a king. They bow before him. He's a king. And they say, Hail, King of the Jews, in mockery. You know what I thought about? One day these same men will bow before him again. They won't mock him then. You know what? They won't have mercy then either. They gave Jesus no mercy. They unleashed all the hatred and anger that they could upon him. And when they kneeled before him, then they did it in mockery. But when they kneel the next time, there won't be any mocking. There won't be any mercy either. They didn't give it to Jesus, and he won't give it to them. Verse 30. And they spit upon him and took the reed and smote him on the head. Most disgraceful and disgusting thing, I suppose, that ever can be done within reason to a man is to be spit on. And as I've said, they took the reed and smote him on the head, driving those thorns even deeper. Now, if you will, turn to John 19. John covers an awful lot of this that Matthew doesn't, and I don't want to miss it. We're talking about Jesus now is before the soldiers, and he's about to be scourged, and he's being mistreated, and they're mocking him and spitting on him and hitting him. John 19, verse 4, look, Pilate therefore went again and said unto them, Behold, I bring him forth to you, that you may know that I find no fault with him. This is when Pilate said the last time. See, now Matthew didn't cover this. Before Pilate released Jesus for the final time, he said, one more time, I just want to let you know I find no fault in him. Then verse 5 and verse 6, then came Jesus forth wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate saith unto them, Behold the man. After he had been scourged, after he had been mocked, Pilate still thinks, maybe they'll have mercy. He brings Jesus out before the Jews again. He has been scourged. He has been whipped. The crown of thorns is upon him. He is bleeding. He is weak. He hasn't had any water for hours, nothing to eat for hours, no sleep for hours. And Pilate says, look at him. Behold the man. Look at him. Isn't this enough? Isn't your anger toward this man sufficient? Isn't this enough punishment? Look at him. In verse 6, when the chief priests, therefore, the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. Pilate's plan didn't work again. Pilate said unto them, Take ye him and crucify him. I find no fault in him. Once again, he says, I find no fault in him. They saw this man beaten to a pulp within an inch of his life, and they still, they're not satisfied. Still not enough. He ain't dead yet. He's not on the cross yet. In verse 7, we have a law, the Jew says, by our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God. Talking about the blasphemy that they claimed that Jesus said he was the Son of God. By the way, he did say that, but the only thing is he was the Son of God. And so their charges was false. They're still trying the best they can. The criminal charges against Jesus hadn't stuck, so they're going back to the blasphemy. And they say, by our law, he deserves to die. He should be executed. And Pilate's more afraid of them than he is of God. So he gives in to them. He appeases the Jews. Look in verse 9. Went again Pilate into the judgment hall and said to Jesus, Whence art thou? But Jesus gave him no answer. Once again, he goes back to Jesus. And he says, Where are you from? And Jesus now doesn't utter a word. You know, I won't do any good. I thought about this. On the surface, it looks like Pilate and the Jews and the soldiers had the upper hand. But in reality, Jesus is the one in control. He's the one in charge. They are doing exactly what the devil wanted them to and what their old flesh wanted to. Look in verse 10 of chapter 19. Then saith Pilate unto him, Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest, listen to this. Pilate is speaking to Jesus. Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee and have power to release thee? Jesus answered, thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore, he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin. Pilate said, don't you understand that I have the power to put you to death or to release you? And Jesus said, you ain't got no power at all, buddy. If my Father didn't let you do what you're doing, you'd be dead now. And that's what I said. It looks like man's in charge and man's in control, but God was the whole time. He was working his plan. Only God can take the wickedness of man and accomplish his will. And man is doing what he wants to do by his own will and his own way, his own volition. But God uses that wickedness of man to accomplish his will. That's our God, folks. God can and God will. He will work. Then in verse 12, from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him. He's still trying somehow to get Jesus free. But the Jews cried out, saying, if thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. Man, they pulled the trump card here. Pilate said one more time, I want to release him. And the Jews said, listen to me, about done. The Jews said to Pilate, if you let this man go, you're not a friend of Caesar, the Roman king. They hated Rome. They hated Caesar. They despised Pilate. But they're saying to Pilate, if you let Jesus go, you're not a friend of Caesar. And boy, that scared Pilate to death. Because the last thing he needs is for Caesar to be mad at him again. I said it already. Pilate's already messed up two or three times. And Caesar's already mad at him. He's already walking on thin ice with Caesar. And when they said, if you let him go, you're not a friend of Caesar. Man, that struck the chord. It sent chills to his back. Verse 13. When Pilate therefore heard the saying, he brought Jesus forth and set down the judgment seat in the place that is called the pavement, but in the Hebrew, Gabbatha. Verse 14. It was the preparation of the Passover about the sixth hour, and he saith unto the Jews, behold, your king. But they cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said to him, shall I crucify your king? The chief priest answered, we have no king. Listen to this. We have no king but Caesar. Man, you talk about sinking low. These Jews despise Caesar, despise Rome, rightfully so. But when it came to where they needed Rome and needed Caesar and needed Pilate to get rid of Jesus, they teamed up with all of it. And they said, if you let him go, you're going to pay. And then they said, we have no king but Caesar. They finally spoke the truth. Here's what they said. Nobody controls our life but Caesar, the Roman emperor, the enemy. And that's exactly what was going on. They're in essence saying even God doesn't control our life. Caesar's our king. They had hit rock bottom. Well, I got to stop there. We're going back to Matthew, so I'll stop here. Very teachy tonight, I knew it would be.